Hello, everyone. It's Greg Gutfeld. This is the one. I like this next guest. He's one of the finest writers and minds in America. And no, it's not Todd Starnes. But this is a guy that whenever I have on my show, on the Greg Gutfeld show, everybody afterwards, like on the Monday at work, go, hey, who was that guy? Who was that dude? Like, what's his name? Walter or William? I've never heard of him before. And I go, that's Walter Kern. He's like an amazing author. He's written 8 books. One of them, you probably saw the movie, Up in the Air. It was with George Clooney. Kind of sucks that that's what you're known for. Everybody goes, oh, you did the movie with George Clooney. But Walter has done so much more. One of my favorite books is Blood Will Out, which is I think might have been his last book. And but he wrote Up in the Air. He also wrote Thumbsucker, which was turned into a movie. He's also reviewed books for New York Magazine, New York Times Book Review. He's just a very smart, humorous person. Walter, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great, Greg.
Oh, it's always nice to hear your voice.
Well, it's nice to hear yours, but it's also nice not to be able to see you for once.
Yes, I know. I know. Is it because my sheer good looks kind of like jumbles up your thoughts? So you have
exactly.
Yes.
Starstruck when I'm there on the set on the actual show, I just forget who I am and what to say when I stare into your. I don't remember the color of your eyes, but I just know they're beautiful.
You know, we toyed with the idea of having like a partition, between the guests and me, so people don't even see me, and that we paint something on the other side of the partition. Todd Starnes, we paint a picture of Todd Starnes, and then everybody's comfortable because he's a likable, fun person. So much to talk about, Walter. First of all, are you happy about last night? I have to say that I'm relieved.
Yeah,
we're talking about the special election with Doug and what's his name?
Roy Moore. Judge Roy Moore.
Yes.
There was a movie in the 70s called Judge Roy Bean, Paul Newman movie, a Western. And I could never get Roy Moore's name right because I confused it with that movie title. And also, Roy Moore never seemed like an entirely real character. He seemed fictional in some way to me. He never acquired true human authenticity mm-hmm. as much as I would watch him. He had this kind of creepy, reserved, I don't know, almost arrogant and detached affect, which seemed weird for someone who was struggling for his political life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he ever believed he could lose, frankly.
No, I think he thought he was – it was in the bag because you had a – you know, it was so – heavily, such a heavily red state that he could still win. You know what he reminded me of when you think about like a fictional characters? I just always thought of Jim Thompson novels. Like he was always that kind of like odd sheriff that kind of like is you
the
don't
killer inside me.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
And the odd sheriff who sat there on the Cracker Barrel with the sprig of grass in his mouth uttering cliches.
Yes. And not real. Kind of fabricated. But then I look at this, the guy that beat him. How lucky is that guy? You know, it's like
Doug Jones will never be called Mr. Charisma. He has all the charisma of a dog biscuit to me. But at the same time, you know, I was fearing at the last minute because I really didn't feel that the soap opera that was going to come with Roy Moore's election was worth it for anyone.
Exactly.
I mean, it was going to be a terrible show. I don't know if I can say that on a podcast. Maybe not.
We'll bleep it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not only was the country spared, you know, the Republican Party certainly was spared.
Right.
And I think Alabama was spared. I think they have enough PR problems without Roy Moore, you mm-hmm. know, and hooking their state's reputation to this guy who, you know, he was making a fool out of himself until the very last minute with that horse riding to the polls thing. I mean,
yeah. I'm trying to figure out what it's like such an obvious cliche. It would be like what a New Yorker would do in Alabama. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to come in on a horse. You know?
Well, I think that was one of the problems with Moore. I think he was almost a self-parody of an Alabaman right winger.
Yeah.
And you know, what stopped me was a few days before the election, I saw that Harper Lee, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird, who was an Alabama resident apparently at the end, had predicted the rise of Roy Moore. I mean, I guess he's been around for a long time. And had sort of said, can we please, you know, do without this? And my residual affection for To Kill a Mockingbird turned me against him at that point.
She passed away recently. Do you think it could have been to avoid this?
It may have been.
I think I think in the last couple of months, Harper Lee. I'll have a producer look that up, but I'm almost positive.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, and lastly, weirdly enough, this guy, besides the fact that he might have been a pedophile, and I would dispute that. I would dispute that label only because in Alabama it takes a lot more to be a pedophile than it does in other states legally. We just didn't need him infuriating Hollywood further. I mean, they've gotten self-righteous enough. I can barely bear it. You know, I can't go on Twitter. I can't watch TV because they're always fulminating.
Right.
Trump was enough. But to double that with Roy Moore was just going to make America almost unendurable.
You know, it's so I was thinking about that last night because I was so relieved that this albatross would not be around, you know, a Republican Party's neck or Trump's neck or anybody's neck. But then when I saw the response, it always is this, and I have to try to ignore my own petty emotional response. When I saw certain people rejoicing, it's exactly the people you're talking about. And a lot of these people, by the way, had their mouths shut about, you know, Weinstein and about Toback forever. And they're so hyper moralistic and righteous about, you know, this creepy dude, but they knew people personally who were being abused. So when they get on, like whether it's Alyssa Milano or whoever, I can't even think of who I said, but they act like they've achieved something. It's like, actually, you know who won? You know who were heroes last night? Were all those write-ins, those Republicans who wrote in somebody else, because that was 20,000 votes that could have gone to Moore, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. That's a guess.
That made the difference. You know, as far as Hollywood goes, you know, I had some running bets with people about who would win, and I felt that in the privacy of the voting booth, just as people had voted for Trump in the privacy of the voting booth, I thought they were going to vote for Jones or write-in if they were Republican, because you know none of their neighbors could see them if they lived in extremely Republican places. You know, they wouldn't be embarrassed, but. You know, as far as Hollywood goes, when I saw them pouring in and like offering drives to the polls, I thought, oh no. You know, because the resentment factor always has to be a part of our calculations. Now. And whenever Hollywood completely rallies around a candidate, that's a -5 to 10 points. I think.
Exactly. You know what? It's funny. It's like when a celebrity or a Hollywood actor gets on Twitter and says something like it's the end of the world, that makes me really happy. Like I feel good when I watch their exaggerated apocalyptic convulsions. So it's like, you know, it's like I'm actually – we're selfless. I'm giving that up. You know, I'm like going like, you know, I'm glad that Moore lost, even though I could have enjoyed watching the convulsions of, you know, the hyper-righteous Hollywood left. But – you know they would. You know what? I think secretly they would have wanted Moore to win because that would have been a tremendous weapon that they could use for the next 6 years. You know,
and it would have confirmed their extremely low estimation of Alabamans and everybody else who you know isn't from Brooklyn and or California. So they weren't given that chance. They don't have that bone to you know. Chew on today, thank goodness. You know,
what do you think? Where does Bannon go from here?
I don't know, Bannon. You know, why doesn't Bannon have a talk show yet, Greg? I mean, doesn't he seem qualified?
I think he got one I think he's getting one on Sirius. That's right.
Yeah. That's right, because Seth Rogen refused to be interviewed by Sirius the other day because they apparently approved too much of Steve Bannon. Yeah, I think Steve Bannon needs to just go directly to the people and start talking and, you know, doing his shtick and letting us decide whether we can stand it or not, you know, person to person. But as a political puppet master,
he's making,
you know,
terrible choices.
Yeah. I mean, the guy that Trump wanted in the first place probably would have won.
Exactly. No, it's true. What's the dude's name? Not Strange. The guy before
Luther.
Luther was okay, but the guy before, there was another dude who would have won, but they ended up with they screwed it up no matter what, and we ended up with the worst candidate you could possibly get. It was a big F up, but you know. The F-up only happened because that seat was vacated because Trump won. So I think I'm trying to do my silver lining thing is like the only reason why this happened was because the Republicans had won and vacated that seat. So given the trade, maybe it's not such a bad thing. And you learn a lesson, right?
Well, you know, you said something on the air the other day about your sort of revulsion to team sport politics. And I followed the comments sections on various conservative news sites as they you know reacted in abhorrence and horror. And they said, well, what is politics except team sports? And you know, there's a point there, but in fact, we do have to run people for these offices.
Right.
We can't yet run computer programs or robots or you know AI software, and so. You know, they have to pick a little better if they want to, you know, channel the people's political will through an actual human being. And Roy Moore was the worst choice.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually will concede that point about when I said the idea of team sports, politics as team sports bothers me. But it actually is kind of a truth that it is a team sport because, you know, the Republicans just lost a seat. You know, because and that's as a team, you just lost a player. But it's kind of like if it's a player on a team who is a horrible person but plays decent right field, I guess. And so you just got to have him in there. Who cares if the guy's a disgusting person? But I guess because it doesn't matter to me that much that I'm okay with like let's lose this and pick a better person. But – If you're the coach of that team, you're going to go mind your own business, you know.
But then again, Greg, you know the anti-team sports sentiment is really what got Trump elected.
True. Yeah.
And secondly, you know, if I'm to be a Trump advisor for a second, which I don't want to be, I have bathrooms to clean and you know coffee to serve at cafes instead. I would think that maybe Roy Moore took the lightning bolt on the sexual harassment front that was meant for Trump. In some ways, I doubt that the bloodlust will be quite as high after this victory. But I may be wrong.
Well, you know, I think that was the kind of like the whole orchestrated removal of Franken, right, was to allow – the Democrats to have the righteousness to go after Trump and in case Moore and also so they could go after Moore and Trump. I think that's why you saw that groundswell around Franken, right? Wasn't that kind of part of it, I guess? I don't know.
And now Franken, who did a sort of modified resignation, like,
yes.
I will resign, but I won't tell you when, is probably going to have to make good on his half promise.
Exactly. If Moore had won, Franken would have said, "Up, I'm back in. If that guy can do it, I can do it." You know?
Yeah.
What do you make of all the just in media in general? We've seen some little like recent screw ups with, you know, CNN, and then you had ABC with Brian Ross, and he screwed up, so now he can't report on Trump. And then CNN, I can't remember what CNN did, but they reported something about WikiLeaks.
CNN reported that Donald Trump Jr. had a heads up about WikiLeaks before they were actually releasing the emails, and it turned out that in fact all that Donald Trump Jr. had was some Trump supporter on email saying, hey, you should check out this WikiLeaks thing
exactly.
because CNN had gotten the date wrong by 10 days.
Exactly. Is that this story to me validates everything about I've ever read on confirmation bias that like CNN could not see that this was just some dude on Twitter saying, hey, check out this thing that's out there. No, they looked at it and they go, this person has to work for WikiLeaks. He has. I mean, like, how could they do that?
Well, you know, I write for Harper's Magazine, a sort of, you know, stuffy, small circulation literary magazine that covers politics. And I will tell you that each piece I write is far more rigorously checked mm-hmm. than those giant CNN bombshells that they've been, you know, throwing out before the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite obvious that they have high-level sources in government. You know, it's speculated that it's Adam Schiff on the Intelligence Committee. No one can really prove it. That they, you know, sort of take the news from wholesale. You see, the big problem with the media right now is that consumers can't really support the quality reporting and investigative reporting that is necessary. And so the producers of news are paying for it. They're paying places like Fusion GPS
right.
to create news and then give it to reporters who put it under their own byline, which
mm-hmm.
is something that happened during the campaign.
Right.
And in this case, you know, the Democratic Party is feeding hot, you know, fresh hot scoops
mm-hmm.
to CNN, and CNN is so afraid that, you know, they might get scooped by MSNBC for 1 minute that mm-hmm. they put them right on the air.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And the thing is, and then what happens is two things happen. Trump is validated by the fake – when he yells fake news. And then what happens is then you can't trust – like, for example – the story on Roy Moore in the Washington Post, which had like four sources, they didn't know each other. It was vetted, but you could any you would get into an argument where people says, "I don't believe that. I don't believe anything in that article." And you it's like, why should I believe anything in that article? You know, and it, because all of these other things are fake. So now you know we have all now we have this kind of like suspicion, which I guess is a healthy thing. I think it's healthy to be suspicious, but it is.
Oh, you know, in fact, one thing. Somebody said to me the other day, you know what? Trump is luminol. He's like that. He's like
right.
that chemical that the police spread on crime scenes, and it shows you where all the blood is.
Yes.
The one good thing you can say about the Trump administration is that it has revealed the limitations of everyone, you know, including Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen how the media works in detail, and they really haven't been at their finest. And you know, the skepticism that we should always have had about the sort of hand-in-glove relationship between establishment sources and reporters, which started to be revealed in the actual WikiLeaks documents, you
mm-hmm.
know, where we saw, you know, how close New York Times reporters were with the Hillary campaign, for mm-hmm. example. You know, that skepticism has, you know, only been exacerbated, but I do think it's ultimately healthy because
mm-hmm.
someone has to hold, you know, big media's feet to the fire.
Yeah, and you know, go ahead, sorry.
No, and until now, we really didn't have the insights into how they worked, and we didn't have a leader who was constantly pushing back at them.
Right.
I mean, Obama pushed back at Fox News, but Fox News was always treated as some sort of special case.
Right.
Only Fox News ever made mistakes or, you know, suffered from bias. Well, it's across the board that ability to make mistakes.
And you know, it is, I say this a lot on The Five, and a lot of people smirk. But I do believe that Donald Trump is, with all of his faults, and this is – I think it's because of his faults, he is a phenomenon. And the phenomenon – he's an engine of transparency. Like there's no, – I don't think he's hiding much of anything because you can hear about it from him. And he's forcing everybody's hand. They have to defend themselves. And also they don't want to validate him. So they end up having to work harder. I think it's – this is like one of the most – consequential moments in politics, I think, and I think in a positive way.
Boy, Greg, I absolutely agree. And in fact, it's the subject of my next column for Harper's, which I just turned in a couple of days ago. This is a revelatory period.
Mm-hmm.
From the JFK assassination documents, mm-hmm. which gave us insights into all these CIA shenanigans, they didn't clear up the JFK assassination, but they did show us that, you know, they were planning on a fake Cuban invasion in Florida and so on like this, to our insights into how the NFL works. Mm-hmm. You know, we now know, you know, what goes on at NFL owners meetings and where the schisms are within the ownership of the NFL, to the Me Too movement.
Right.
Because frankly, I don't think anybody would have gone on after Harvey Weinstein right. in the first place if the patronage of the Clintons and the Obamas had still been in place.
So true. Yeah.
So I think though it's painful, you know, though ripping the bandage off is painful, we are truly seeing where the wounds are and what we're made of and where the cracks are. And that's not necessarily a negative process because, you know, they used to say sunshine is the best best disinfectant, and we've got a lot to disinfect in this country.
You know, I was talking to two staffers who are addicted to this bizarre phenomenon that you should write about. It's the pimple popper. Have you heard about this doctor, Dr. Pimple Popper? And she goes – and women watch these videos of this dermatologist popping zits, and they can't stop looking at it. If you Google pimple popper, it'll blow your mind how – what a following. I bring that up because I think that's what's going on. We're watching all these zits being popped.
You know? America is getting a facial, a really deep facial.
Exactly.
And its red, swollen face is no indication of how beautiful it will be once all of this junk is out of our pores.
You have elaborated on that analogy beautifully, or extended metaphor. You're so right. Because right now it's ugly. It's red. It's ugly and red. But it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. And like, and the wall will be like the foundation. I don't even.
Oh God. Yeah, I don't know. I just can't picture the wall. I think the wall should have LCD screens in it. You know,
then it'd be okay. People would love that. And LCD screens are so cheap because you make them in Mexico.
Exactly. It should just. In fact, the LCD screens should just show what the landscape would look like if the wall were not there, thus rendering it invisible.
That might be the greatest idea for the wall. It's just it just shows that this is. It's almost like a. It's not really. It's not a window. It's actually. We're just showing you what's on the other side.
Right.
So, what are you working on now? You got to. I want to ask you because I only got a few minutes left. Are they making a movie out of Blood Will Out? I think I asked you once before, but I wasn't sure if you said yes or no.
That is the endless mystery of Hollywood. Are they making a movie? People buy rights. Mm-hmm. You know, directors are interested. Scripts are written. All that stuff is happening. And in fact, it's happening more on the TV side, the miniseries side.
Yeah.
But until someone, you know, turns on a camera, it's all in the head or it's all in the lawyer's office. So that hasn't happened yet. And Blood Will Out, you know, for your listeners, is a story of my friendship with a guy named Clark Rockefeller, who was not a Rockefeller, but a con man and a serial killer, and who I trusted for a long time and then suddenly, horrifyingly, saw unmasked by the legal system. So it'll make a great TV show, and one of your listeners, I'm sure, is deeply involved in that industry and will be calling me presently.
Yeah, you know, that always – that's the kind of power of my podcast. I've nothing but kind of like movers and shakers in the entertainment world come to my podcast.
Hey, well, you had Dr. Drew on the show the other night.
Yes.
And that was the first time I've seen Dr. Drew since, you know, they got rid of him.
He's I didn't know that. He's great, though. He's very he's incredibly charming, you know. And he's got that kind of like casual, wealthy look. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I will never have that casual wealthy look. Like
where, my wife, who's a journalist, went and interviewed him once and spent a couple of days with him. And I can tell you, she spent time with movie stars and all kinds of people. But when I got a hit of what he was like, I was jealous and insecure. He seems like he's got it all figured out.
Yes.
He's kind of got a wonderful complexion.
Right. That's
and
His skin is just perfect. And and also the way he also has that voice. He has a very relaxing voice without even trying. And he also has an opinion and an answer for almost everything, you know, without being he doesn't come across as arrogant, you know. Fox should hire him. I'm going to try and push that.
He was a great guest. In fact, as I was listening to the show, I was listening on Sirius, Steve Bannon's channel, SiriusXM, and I was thinking, is this a prelude to Dr. Drew getting a show? Because I thought he was kind of unfairly treated by CNN, frankly.
Yeah.
He speculated on Hillary's
health, right? And he might have been right.
Yeah, and then they just disappeared him, you know. And then the next thing I see, he's on the Greg Gutfeld show. So keep it up, man. Yeah, make those comebacks.
I always find I find those diamonds in the rough that were treated unfairly. He done Red Eye too. I was a big Loveline fan, and he also played did a light, nice skit with Kat. So he liked it. You know, he doesn't have any kind of star attitude, but but yeah, he was great. When are you going to be on with us again? By the way.
I'm coming out there in January.
I
can't wait to get out there, man. I mean, the new year is going to be different. I just have a feeling we're setting up for a whole different tone politically and everything. Yeah.
I agree with you completely. You're nuts. All right, Walter. I will talk to you soon, and excellent. And everybody go out and buy his books. Blood Will Out is a great – I mean, if you're going on a – how's this? If you're flying home to see somebody this weekend, the best plane book – is Blood Will Out. It sucks you right in. Like an engine.
Thank you, Greg.
You got it, Walter.
Like a bird into a jet engine.
Exactly. Thank you. You improve every metaphor I do, which is amazing. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you.
See ya. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.